Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the Story Show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1238, we present three stories by new writer Andrew Iamaki. On tonight's program, we feature the writing of new writer Andrew Iamaki. Andrew Iamaki was born in Peterborough in 1989, the youngest of three children. At age 12, he moved from a city of more than 72,000 to the small farming village of Cambrai, just north of Lindsay. It was a culture shock for him, trading sidewalks and parks for expanding fields of hay and soy. Andrew Iamaki grew up an avid sports fan, playing all types of sport, with a penchant for hockey, and also developed a love for the visual arts. He finds inspiration in the contrast between the rules and organized structure of competitive sport and the inventiveness and open-ended creativity of the visual arts. Andrew Iamaki's storytelling is subtle. He doesn't hit you over the head. His observations are quiet and almost understated. He sets such a reposed mood you can almost hear a pin drop. In his descriptions, he truly shows and rarely tells. Indeed, what he leaves unspoken is often more powerful than what is said. Tonight's first story is told from the perspective of a little boy watching his mother get ready for work, as he also prepares himself to watch his favorite Saturday morning cartoon. Let's listen now as Andrew Iamaki reads Power Rangers, tonight on Life Rattle.
Power Rangers by Andrew Iamaki. I stand in the doorway to the kitchen at 7 in the morning. The sun casts an outline of the window onto the floor. The sun-soaked linoleum burns my bare feet. My eyes blur over with sleep. I rub them into focus and watch Mom get ready for work. She mixes instant coffee in a cup, two milks, two sugars. I want to ask her how she can drink that stuff, but I stay quiet. I know not to bother Mom when she's in a hurry. She stirs the coffee and licks the spoon and tosses it into the empty sink. The sound of metal on metal rattles throughout the kitchen. Before she takes her first sip of coffee, I slip into the washroom and close the door. When I'm done, I push the handle on the toilet and slam down the seat. I climb onto the toilet to reach the faucet and scrub my hands with soap and water. Then I remember Power Rangers is on and tow my way to the living room. I hear my older brother Sean snort and groan in his sleep when I pass our bedroom door. I drag my feet along the brown bristles of the carpet and reach the living room. I plop myself in front of the TV and notice it's already on, but turned on to the stupid news. It's Saturday morning. Should be on Power Rangers. The remote rests on the coffee table, right between Mom's pack of Du Maurier's and Dad's pack of Player's Light. I reach for the remote and almost tip the ashtray. The mountain of ash and butts looks ready to spill over. My fingers punch in the numbers 2 and 5. The TV hisses before the show's familiar theme song plays from the right speaker and not the left. I wind up and slap the solid oak frame of our top-of-the-line GE floor model TV. The picture flickers briefly. I hear a pop, then a screech. Eventually, the left speaker hums and sings along with the right one. The episode is a rerun, but I don't mind. Tommy is my favorite Power Ranger. He's green. Mom brings me a bowl of Cheerios. I barely notice, and I forget to say thanks. I grab the spoon and force as many tiny O's into my mouth that my tiny cheeks can hold. I lick my lips. A small dribble of milk escapes my mouth and trickles down my cheek. It collects at the tip of my chin and drips back into my bowl. Mom wipes my face with a towel and then rubs the back of my head with her hand. Look at the rat's nest you have on your head. It looks like nobody owns you. Mom loves making this joke about my hair. Maybe your dad can comb it for you. Mom always rushes to get ready for work at 7 in the morning. She works a lot. After I go to bed, I can hear her scrambling in the living room to get ready for her other job. I sit cross-legged, nestled on the shag carpet. I notice my ankles start to itch when some commercials come on. I look around for Mom. I see that her demoriers are gone, and I hear her car pulling out of the driveway. I sprint to the front door and peek through the window. I wave goodbye. She waves back and points to her eyes, her chest, and then at me. I watch her drive away until she turns the corner down the street. I stagger back to my bowl of Cheerios and sit back down. I look around the room and study the wood paneling and the paintings on the wall. They remind me of Grandma and Grandpa's cottage. My sister makes her way from her bedroom and sits down on the couch. Beth's hair tangles in the back, but not nearly as much as mine. She breathes on her glasses and wipes them with her nightgown. She examines them and props them back on her petite nose, then digs the sand from her eyes. Beth, why does Mom always have to work on weekends? I ask. She just does. Okay, I say. Beth is smart. She's in grade 6. I'm in kindergarten. The commercials end, and my sister gets up and leaves. I watch the action on the screen, but I think about my mom. I wonder why she never watches Power Rangers with me anymore, even though she promises. I know Dad can't because he works all night and Mom tells me not to wake him. Sean and Beth won't watch it with me either. Power Rangers is a boys' show, so Beth isn't allowed to watch it. And Sean thinks it's stupid. I think he's stupid.
That was Andrew Iamaki reading his story, Power Rangers. Tonight's second story is also told from a child's viewpoint, as he unhappily visits his grandpa's house, where his father now lives. Let's listen now as Andrew Iamaki reads Grandpa's House, tonight on Life Rattle.
Grandpa's House by Andrew Iamaki. Dad's 87 Mustang hums as he gears the engine down and brakes the car to a stop. He flicks the turn signal. Click, click, click. I stare at the dashboard and see the blinking green arrow point at me. He edges the car onto Reed Street as vehicles blur past us, then pulls out and into the closest lane when the traffic eases. Dad turns right because he lives with Grandpa on Summerhill Drive. He used to turn left when he had an apartment on Tallwood Road. We reach Grandpa's house, and Dad parks on the road facing down a hill. The Japanese maple tree in my grandfather's front yard stirs in the breeze, its dark red leaves waving at me as I step out of the car. "Can I play hockey?" I ask Dad. "Go say hi to Grandpa first. He misses you." I cut across the lawn to the driveway. My feet scrape against the faded asphalt, and I kick every pebble I see. Two blue spruce trees frame the front of the house. Two large boxwood plants sit at the sides of the porch, and four wooden beams Grandpa added encircle the entire garden. I drag my hand through the prickly needles of the spruce tree by the driveway. My hockey net rests against the backyard fence. Black puck marks on the house's pink brick walls direct me to the side door. Dad clicks the handle and Lassie yelps from inside. Grandpa stands in the kitchen by the microwave, yelling at his dog. "Istu, zucchini." Lassie sits and stops barking. We step inside and I pet Lassie behind her ears. I make my way up the three stairs to the landing of the kitchen. The humming from the fridge grows louder when Dad puts his three tall boys of Molson Export in the door. I sit on the top step and take my shoes off. Beep, beep, Beep. Grandpa's coffee is ready. The pattern of the linoleum floor mimics fancy tile work as I slide across it on my sock feet. I walk to the living room. Dust weighs down the faded pink throws that cover the love seat and the couch. I sit down on the love seat and breathe in a cloud of dust that forms around me and tickles my nose. Grandpa's 24-inch GE TV broadcasts the Blue Jays game on the CBC. The light from the television screen reflects off the studio piano, its legs digging into the faded beige carpet. Baby pictures of my brother, my sister, my two cousins, and me lay on top of the piano. Dad and Grandpa talk in the kitchen. I bounce up from the love seat and join them. They don't notice me. Grandpa, can I have a carrot muffin? I ask. No, Dad says. Yeah, I suppose so, Grandpa says, slightly grinning. I take my treat and leave the kitchen and head to the dining room. I turn down the hallway that narrows at the end and leads to Grandpa and Karen's rooms. I'm not allowed in them. The dining room is halfway down the hallway, across from the washroom. I glide across the hardwood floor and past antique frames with hand-painted pictures. I stop myself and turn into the dining room. I walk across the carpet to the dinner table and sit down. I push aside a mountain of lined papers that I had drawn on before. Two sheets catch flight and land under the hutch at the other side of the room. Granny's knick-knacks fill a cabinet that towers menacingly behind me. I can feel it breathing down my neck. I peel back the wrapper on the muffin. As I eat, I draw a dog with yellow ears flopped down on the sides of its face, its pink nose sniffing in the air. I write in big block letters, "My dog," even though I don't have one. I crumple the wrapper and race back through the hallway to the kitchen on my way to the hideaway garbage bin by the sink. I flail as I slide on the linoleum floor again and almost trip Grandpa on my way past him. "Whoa ho ho and a bottle of buttermilk," Grandpa sings as he regains his footing. "Dad, can I play hockey now?" He nods. I bolt to the stairs. I knot the blue laces on my shoes. I push Lassie out of the way and click open the door.
That was Andrew Iamaki reading his story, Grandpa's House. In our final story tonight, a young man and his cheap friend shoot a game of pool as he anxiously waits for his girlfriend to arrive after work. Let's listen now as Andrew Iamaki reads Papa's Billiards, tonight on Life Rattle.
Papa's Billiards by Andrew Iamaki. The brakes squeak as the driver slows the cab to a stop in front of Papa's Billiards. The cabbie unlocks the doors. The hinges creak as we swing the doors out towards the curb. Logan and I crawl out. The cabbie clears his throat and asks for the $7.75 we owe. "You're going to pay for pool, right?" asks Logan, examining the money in his wallet. I nod. Logan hands him a $10 bill. The driver fingers through the ashtray filled with coins and hands the change to him. Logan shuts the door. He snatches his pack of putter cigarettes from his left coat pocket and deposits his toonie and quarter in his right coat pocket. Logan crinkles the plastic wrapper as he fishes out a cigarette. He slides it from the foil and places it between his thin lips and flicks his Zippo a couple times before it catches. The flame sets his features aglow, then hides them with a flick of his wrist. He savors his first puff and exhales a fog of smoke. "Jen gonna be here tonight?" he asks. "Yeah, at least I hope so. She said she'd stop in after work." I see Logan nod his head through a mixture of his cigarette smoke and my cold breath. I stand and wait impatiently as he fills and empties his lungs two more times. "Let's go in," I say. "It's fucking freezing out here." Logan flicks his butt into the snowbank, and we walk towards the door of Pappas Billiards. I open it to a sudden, swift blow of heat that strikes me in the chest and face. The hot air inside the pool hall burns my throat more than the smoke outside. The last finger of cold slides down my back and flees in a shiver. We make our way to the bar stools and take a seat. Logan's glasses fog up from the warmth, and he wipes them with his shirt. "What'll it be tonight, guys?" asks Pappas as he mops the countertop in front of us with a once white rag in his hand. The smell of vinegar irritates the hairs in my nose, and my eyes water. "Guinness," says Logan. "Just a rye and coke for me." Pappas winces as he cracks the can of coke in Logan's Guinness. He pours them into two glasses and splashes mine with a shot of rye and a squeeze from a plastic lime. I toss two fives on the counter and we grab our drinks. The fluorescent lights shine toenail yellow over the pool tables and the clacking of white on the stripes and solids drowns out the Leafs game playing on a TV behind the bar. They're losing anyways. Logan turns to me to speak. His eyes widen, exposing the white crescents, and his mouth slightly opens to a subtle grin. He exhales, and this time he doesn't spew smoke. "You know we both have something in common, eh?" "Yeah, what?" I ask. "We both made your mother scream when we came." Logan barely contains his laughter. I smile and nod. We sit in silence for a few moments until the door behind us opens. I turn to see if it's Jen. Instead, two drunken girls stumble in. They almost trip over their heels as they make their way past us, and almost stumble again as they climb the stairs to the second floor. The Leafs just finished losing, so I figure it must be close to 10. Jen doesn't get off until 10:30, but I still had hoped it was her. I turn back to the bar and fix my eyes on the collection of bottles. I look from right to left, hopping from one bottle top to another. Only one of the 30 or more liquor bottles is full. The rest seem more like bottles of air instead of liquor. I stare at the final bottle on the shelf, a second near-empty bottle of Crown Royal. I notice a 10-inch black-and-white RCA TV set beside the bottle with a flickering image of the billiard tables upstairs. I see our friends Katie and Joe on the screen playing a game of pool. I punch Logan on the arm, then point to the screen. We down the last mouthful of our drinks and stand up. Logan fiddles with the change in his pocket, not wanting to commit to a round for the both of us. I throw another two fives at Pappas, and we slug our way up the narrow staircase. The old wooden steps strain under our feet, sighing with relief when we reach the top. Logan's sister, Katie, yells at the back of the room. "What took you guys so long?" "Shut up, Katie. Nobody likes you," Logan says, smiling. Laughter interrupts the clacking of balls and the clinking of glasses. Logan slides by the first table and checks out the two drunken girls as he passes the second. I get stuck at the first table, behind some guy's backstroke. He calls his shot. Off this bank, off this bank, off this bank, off the seven, into the side pocket. He misses, and his friends laugh. They call him fag and queer. I juke past them and eye Logan at the last table. He stands next to the chalkboard. Katie has already written on it. "Do you have to poop?" "Yes, no, maybe?" "Little bit, about half cup." It's the Katie thing to do, and somebody, usually her, always checked off, "little bit, about half cup." I make my way past the second table and the two drunken girls. They smell like they've drunk 6 tequila shots and 12 red jello shots and bathed in a barrel of perfume. I wish it was 10:30. Before I even set down my drink, Katie hands me her cue. She's playing against Joe and losing. I pull out my phone. It's only 10:15. "What are you?" I ask Katie. "Solids," she says. I lean over the rail and catch a whiff of the beer-soaked felt as I eye my shot. I'm surprised I can even smell it over the perfume counter to my right. I line up my shot and draw back. I shanked the cue ball. I could have done that, Katie yells at me. Joe lets it slide. I grab the cue ball and reset my shot. I pull back the cue and launch it at the three ball. Crack. The red sphere smacks the plastic rim of the pocket and falls in. I'm kind of a big deal, I chirp to Joe. My phone buzzes in my pocket and I squirm to get it. It's my alarm. I must have set it to remind me for when Jen gets off. Only 10 more minutes. I fidget with my phone, with every passing second, and watch the digital hands make their way around my pocket-sized LCD screen. At 10:28, my phone buzzes again. It's a text from Jen. On my way, kiss. I close my phone and don't reply. Joe misses on his last shot, and I'm left with three balls to sink. I line up the four and sink it. I aim and sink the six. Only the one ball and the eight ball sit on the tattered felt. I've screwed myself. The eight ball lies in front of my ball, but I think I can chip the white ball over it. I tent my fingers to a fine point and angle the cue downward. I think of Jen's face and smile. I fire the cue forward, and it lifts the cue ball off the felt. It launches upwards and soars past the balls and continues over the railing and off the table. The ball dips and lands at the edge of the table where I set my drink. The cup teases me as it wobbles around for a few seconds, then smashes onto the table and bleeds Ryan Coke. I was going for style points, I say. Bullshit, Logan calls and takes another sip of his drink. I look at the time again. It's 10:34. It's only a 2-minute drive from Price Chopper's. Jen should be here by now. Where is she? My chest pounds the rhythm. Where is she? I'm worried. I miss her. I love her. I look at my phone and pray for a text, but don't get one. Shouts of fag and queer echo in the room, then suddenly stop. I peer through the musk hovering over the two girls at the second table and look for whatever it is that shut the guys up at the first table. I see Jen turn the corner of the stairs. Her red hair flows from underneath her knitted toque. I can just make out her cold-kissed cheeks that glow a soft pink through her matching knitted scarf. The guys check her out and continue yelling at each other. I smile at her. She smiles back. She says hello to everyone, hugs Katie, then moves in closer to me. I pull her in and press her cold clothes against my body. I smell the sweet cold in the fabric mixed with her subtle scent. It's unique to her, and I've waited all day to breathe it in. Did you miss me? She asks. No, why would I? She smiles, kisses my cheek, and whispers into my ear, I miss you too, babe.
That was Andrew Iamaki reading his story, Papa's Billiards. This concludes Life Rattle number 1238. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Andrew reading his stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Actman. Tune into Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear more new stories by Andrew Iamaki. We'll be right back.